the world of professional aerial photography, and a few tips for amateurs, too. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We've all heard about aerial photography, but maybe you've always wondered, how much of this work is there out there? Who does it? What do they get paid? And what's involved? How do you do it well? We're here to talk to somebody today who maybe can answer some of those questions for us. My guest is James Cavanaugh, who operates James Cavanaugh Photography in Tonawanda, New York. And among the photography he does is a lot of aerial work. James, thanks very much for taking a few minutes out to talk to our listeners today.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, first off, I know you are a pilot. You mentioned that I think that you'd had a Cessna 150. How did you get involved in flying, and which came first, the flying or the photography?
Well, actually, my interest in flying came first, but actually the photography from a professional side came earlier. I'd been interested in flying since I was 4 years old and seeing the Blue Angels at an air show, and it wasn't until I was age 27 that friends of mine asked me for lunch, and I thought we'd go to a local restaurant, but instead we boarded their brand new Piper Seneca 2 in 1979 and flew to Atlantic City for lunch. And I said, you know, it's about time that I learn how to do that. My interest in photography grew in high school, where I was on track to become an electrical engineer. And as my passion and skill with photography improved, I switched schools and left school for engineering and went to school for photography and started my business in 1975. So I'd been a working photographer for 5 years before I got my pilot's license. And once that happened in June of 1980, the two blended together very nicely.
Well, if you have family and friends who see you enter an engineering program, and then you decide partway through, you know what, Mom, Dad, I think I'm going to go into an art program instead. Do you think that parents have, you know, this brief moment where their life flashes before their eyes and they see their kids going down the wrong path? I mean, did it take some time to convince people that you were doing the right thing?
I'm sure that my parents had that moment, but I was fortunate that they were very supportive, but they also saw that I had some reasonable skills with it, and they were very encouraging to move ahead into that as long as I treated it as a business.
Well, and there's the key. If you can treat art as a business without destroying one or the other, I think you've figured it out.
It's a definite balancing act that we work all the time, even today, 33 years later.
Well, now, we've all seen good aerial photography. We've seen anecdotes here and there on web forums or in aviation news pieces about aerial photographers. How many of you guys are there, and who hires you?
Well, it's tough to tell, and there seems to be two general levels of people that do aerial photography. There are those like myself that are primarily a commercial photographer and working full-time in the business, and then there are other people that are looking at ways to earn a little bit of extra income or perhaps help pay for their airplane and do it on a part-time basis. In terms of the clientele, there's actually quite a large number of different folks that have needs for aerial photography from time to time. My particular client base tends to consist mostly of engineers, contractors, real estate developers, government agencies like the New York State Department of Transportation, architects, and sometimes homeowners. Anybody that's looking for that different perspective, a different way to see their particular building. So we find that we have a pretty broad client base. The only disadvantage from a business side is they don't need us on a regular basis. It's a sort of a special thing that they need occasionally.
Are there industry channels that you can pursue? I know early in my radio career, my friends thought it was remarkably unglamorous, but I developed a niche doing narrations for chemical industry training films, and they thought, man, that's just dumb. But it was actually a pretty good little side business, and it paid reasonably well. Is it common for an aerial photographer to get into a fairly regular relationship with people, in the real estate business or in city planning or that sort of thing?
It does to some degree. We do have some clients. We have some national chains, retail chains, that will require aerial photographs of sites before they will expand. And basically what we're doing for them is providing images where they can look at competitive properties, They can look at the roadways, the access and egress. They can look at housing density counts and so forth. So they may be looking at 20 different sites in a region to decide on three new franchise outlets that they're going to open. So they'll hire someone like me to photograph all 20 of those sites. So there's a niche there, but I think that if we look at photography as a whole, aerial photography is sort of a niche right on its own.
Well, let me talk about that niche too. Are you a pilot and also a photographer? Is that common, or are most aerial photographers just photographers and hire somebody to take them up in a plane?
Well, I think if we look back at those two tiers, I think pilots by nature are interested, they're visual people, because that's part of the allure of flying is seeing the world differently, having that freedom. We've got the great opportunity to see the earth in different ways as we crisscross the country. So there's a natural, I think, visual awareness that pilots have that the general populace may not. On the business side, if we look at professional commercial photographers, the vast majority of them probably are not pilots, but it's interesting to me when I attend different conferences and trade shows that you get a group of photographers together, and it's surprising how many of them are pilots. Again, and I think it's that visual draw that brings them to that interest. Also, the sort of sense of adventure, I think, is a natural trait that many photographers have as well. But I think if we really were to break down the industry on the professional side, that there are an awful lot more professional photographers that are simply hitching a ride and not pilots themselves.
Well, and it certainly is not a good idea to make a living taking pictures as the sole occupant of an aircraft. I mean, I can see that could be full of dangers.
It is, and one of the things we look at is safety. Now, there are certain times where I will fly and photograph at the same time, but it's certainly not going to be in a busy Class B airspace that we attempt that. But it's a situation where the safety concerns in flying are very important.
When we come back from the break, Jim, I want to ask you about some of the nuts and bolts of how this is done, and maybe get some of our listeners who are amateur photographers and pilots a little bit of information on how to improve what they're doing as a hobby. Talking today with James Cavanaugh of James Cavanaugh Photography in Tonawanda, New York. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with James Cavanaugh, who is an aerial photographer based in Tonawanda, New York. Jim, I want to ask you, for those of us who just, you know, happen to take a digital camera along when we fly and maybe see something that's just too remarkable to not come back and share with friends. I know I see a lot of photography on the web that comes from pilots who just say, "Oh man, look at that. I gotta show this to the guys in the hangar when I get back." What does it take to do good aerial photography? A lot of people come back with either very poor composition or too much of the airplane in the photo or blurry or whatever.
Well, there's a couple of little things that help out a lot. Having a camera that has an adjustable shutter speed and aperture is very helpful, and you want to use a reasonably high shutter speed, not so much to freeze the motion of the airplane by its movement, but basically the vibration that's inherent in aircraft. One of the other things that people that are doing it occasionally can be careful of, there's a tendency, if you don't have an aircraft like my Cessna 150 where the window can be opened, to lean the camera against the window itself or to brace their body against the seat or such, and there's a lot of inherent vibration in a general aviation aircraft or helicopter. So it's a situation where you want to sort of isolate yourself and minimize that vibration. A couple of the other things, people have a tendency to want to use very long telephoto lenses, and I know that in my particular case, we use lenses that are from slightly wide angle to just slightly telephoto, except in very rare cases. That has a tendency to minimize the vibration. The other thing that we don't have as much control, other than selecting the day that we photograph, is the weather, because we have to deal with haze and visibility issues, especially if we're flying at a higher altitude and or in big cities. And it's a situation where a hazy day, the photographs just aren't going to be as clean and crisp as a nice, beautiful, clear day, the day, usually the day after a cold front blows through and clears everything out. So picking the right time of day or the right type of day is also very important.
Now, you talk about doing shoots in busy Class B airspace, obviously where you're functioning solely as a photographer and you have somebody else working as a pilot. How do you coexist with other aircraft when you get into busy traffic?
Well, that's actually a very important point. And what you have to do first is consider what normal air traffic is, and consider this from an air traffic controller's point. They're used to an airport environment where someone is leaving the primary airport in a Class B and flying away, or someone is coming in flying into that airport, or the third case generally is somebody transitioning that airspace in a reasonably straight line. What we're asking to do is go over here and circle for a little while, and then come over here, circle for a little while, and so forth. So being a little bit aware that we're a bit of a different challenge for the air traffic controller is the first part. Understanding that getting access to a specific area might be difficult based on the general flight patterns that they have in and out of the airport. And if you work in an area long enough, you can get used to that. And I've found that the most helpful thing is just talking with the air traffic controllers, letting them know what you'd like to do, and oftentimes offering them a solution. Here in Buffalo, in the Buffalo area where we shoot very frequently, inevitably we'll have something on the approach end for runway 23 at Buffalo International, and we'll take off from our home airport of Lancaster, New York, get our squawk code, tell them where we'd like to go, and if it's on that approach corridor, we'll suggest that if an aircraft is coming in on arrival, let us move to the southeast to hold. And they'll generally approve that and say, that's terrific. So we can get into the area, maybe make one or two turns around the subject site, and then move out to the southeast. But having that open communication with controllers is very important, and realizing sometimes they're going to vector you or move you, and it's for collision avoidance or keeping you away from the other aircraft. And you have to, especially in a Class B or a Class C, you have to comply with that to keep the airflow going. But again, offering some option, I found, is generally met with a positive response, and they'll let us do that.
Now, you have mentioned a couple of things that remind me of a question here. You mentioned that shooting is done from fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters, and then you mentioned you tell the air traffic control you want to circle, unquote, an area for a while. I think a lot of people maybe have the misconception that it requires a helicopter to do still photography of the ground. But if anything, I remember in talking with you earlier that you have actually had to ask some fixed-wing pilots to speed up.
Well, that's an interesting point. One of the things that I'm looking at is, and I guess people that do a lot of aerial photography who are flying fixed-wing airplanes, we become very, very wonderful experts in turns around a point, and that's basically what we're doing. But at the same point, your attention is being diverted. Even flying with another pilot, there's diverted attention. The airplane is in a steeper bank, generally 30 to 45 degrees, so you're loading up the aircraft. So the last thing that I want to do is slow that airplane down. Now, a lot of people will make the assumption that I need to slow down so the picture is sharp, and we talked about that a few moments ago. But think of it this way. If you're driving down the thruway at 65 miles an hour, and you look out the window of your car 2 feet away, that road is a blur going by. But if you look across the median or across the side of the road to the billboard that's 500 feet away, its relative motion is very slow. Same thing with an aircraft, and in a fixed-wing airplane in a populated area, you have to be at least 1,000 feet up and 2,000 feet laterally from the highest object. So the relative motion, even if you're at 120 knots, is still reasonably slow, so you don't have to slow the aircraft down. Now, in the case of helicopters, so almost the same thing applies. The helicopter does have the wonderful ability to get down lower and can result in more dramatic photographs, and a helicopter, if necessary, can hover. But if you're in a hover in a helicopter, you're putting the greatest strain on the machine. And my preference, and most of the pilots that I fly with, the helicopter pilots, we want to keep moving at 40 to 50 knots. So if a problem arises, if there's an engine problem, a tail rotor problem, we have the opportunity to set up an auto rotation. So there are rare times where we'll get down low and hover in a helicopter, but most of the time in a helicopter, we're between 200 and 300 feet, and we're moving ahead usually at 60 knots or greater, orbiting around the subject to get the views we're looking for.
Now, it's interesting. A lot of TV crews do that same thing, and I remember before I got into aviation, I used to think that they had that circling motion just so that it wouldn't be a boring picture, so that there would be some subtle motion on the picture they were showing on TV. But now I understand that, you know, translational lift puts much less strain on a helicopter to have it moving at some forward speed rather than having it just hanging in the air. That's really, really hard on it.
Absolutely. And if you have a helicopter where the rotor blades aren't tracked well, when you're sitting in a hover, the vibration levels go up remarkably. And it's a situation that moving ahead just smooths out the ride just a little bit more. And again, if you're shooting at a shutter speed of a 500th of a second, a 1,000th, and many of the digital cameras today go right on up to an 8,000th of a second, there's not going to be any motion or blur in that photograph whatsoever.
Jim, listen, we really appreciate your time and some of the insights we've gotten into the business and some tips for listeners. If our listeners want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Best way is right through my website, and that website is cavphoto.com, and that's CAVPHOTO.com. We have galleries on there that people can see some examples of the work, both my aerial and architectural photography. And there's a contact page. And if they have questions or such, they can email me through the website, and I'd be more than happy to get back with them if they have specific questions.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate you taking a few minutes out. I've learned a few things, and we may call on you again if this subject calls for some expertise.
Sounds great, Paul. It's been my pleasure.
My guest has been James Cavanaugh of James Cavanaugh Photography in Tonawanda, New York. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.